community-based participatory research methods to engage and empower youth. Maymay received her PhD in public health nutrition from the University of North Carolina.
Good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm going to be sharing with you some data of a photo voice project that I conducted in collaboration with the Children's Aid Society. So the title of my presentation today is Utilizing Photo Voice to Understand Youth Perspectives of Their Food Environment in Low-Income New York City Neighborhoods. And before I start my presentation, I just wanted to go ahead and acknowledge the contributions of my co-authors. I also do not have any financial relationships to disclose. So as we all know, childhood obesity is a major public health concern in the United States, with about a third of youth being either overweight or obese. And in New York City, the issue is that much greater, where about 40% of our youth are actually either overweight or obese. And there are disparities across certain demographics, and that youth residing in low-income neighborhoods are at increased risk due to unique factors within their community food environment. And so it's really important to be able to develop creative methods in terms of how we can increase awareness around the challenges that these at-risk youth face in their community food environment, and also think about ways that we can engage youth in their own personal health, because as we all know, healthy eating isn't a cool topic for youth, and so we have to think about ways that makes it fun for them. So many of you may already be familiar with PhotoVoice, which is a unique community-based participatory action research method that involves placing cameras in the hands of community youth so they may visually represent and communicate their experiences. And through this whole methodology, PhotoVoice will help to promote awareness and engagement and also empowerment and hopefully community activism. And so the photo voice methodology helps to be able to engage marginalized youth by a various set of processes. And one of the things is obviously through the lens of a camera, the youth are able to document their perspectives and their concerns around certain issues. And then we use those photos to interview and discuss the issues at hand, utilizing questions through the showed technique. And it's a series of questions that start out with more observational questions around, well, why did you take this picture? Tell me the story about what's happening in this photo. And as you proceed down, you ask more detailed questions around potential actionable steps that perhaps the community members or the youth themselves can take to be able to promote or contribute some type of positive change within their own environment. And so through this process, it helps the youth to be able to participate in critical thought and reflection. It helps to document and record the community's assets and also concerns, and increases awareness through of their issues. And it also can help to advocate for change and to help influence policy. Having these photos, having these visuals and stories around it can help provide a platform to discuss issues with policymakers and community leaders. And this also creates a sense of accomplishment for the community members and a sense of community around themselves to better understand that I'm not the only one who's experiencing these issues, and it's a much greater issue than just me. So our study, Voices Through Cameras, we had a couple aims. The primary aim was to identify perceived barriers and facilitators of positive dietary behaviors among youth residing in low-income New York City neighborhoods, with the focus to reduce the risk of childhood obesity. In addition to that, we actually wanted to follow these photo voice assignments and the awareness that the youth would hopefully have developed through these photo voice assignments, that this can actually help lead to a youth-led community-based project to ultimately improve the local community food environment. And I'm going to be mainly focusing on the results actually for Aim 1, which is identifying the perceived barriers and facilitators. We are very fortunate to collaborate with the Children's Aid Society. It is a New York City-based nonprofit youth organization. They are 160 years old. They are extremely well known and trusted in the communities across New York City. They have about 40 sites across the five boroughs in New York City, and they develop some excellent after-school programming. They are very open to tailoring and actually embedding research into their program, which I know can be quite challenging to have a academic and community-based partnership in that way, but we are very fortunate for them to be open to this component. And so we embedded this Voices Through Cameras, this Photo Voice project, into a 24-week food justice program that was run by the Children's Aid Society, targeted for middle school youth. So this the food justice program had three phases. The first phase was conducting a community food assessment, which is where we did the photo voice assignments. And then phase two, guided by the photos and the awareness that they developed through these assignments, the youth then planned a community food justice project and then took action. They implemented this youth-led project. And at the end, we had a celebration and a photo voice exhibit. So once again, I mentioned I'm going to be focusing on actually the primary aim of the Photo Voice project. So we had 16 middle school youth participate, and the youth attended this food justice program across two sites. The youth actually who participated specifically in the Photo Voice component of it also had to have a supportive home environment. We worked very closely with the site coordinators and the food justice teachers to identify the youth who they felt would be able to complete these assignments, because it required a fair amount of responsibility and a fair amount of commitment and engagement. We were handing digital cameras over to the youth, and they were being asked to complete the assignments within a one-week period and return the cameras so we can download them and interview and discuss these photos. And so the site coordinators helped us to be able to select the youth they felt would be most engaged around these assignments. So with the Photo Voice assignments, the data collection occurred across five sessions in fall of 2012 and winter of 2013. The first session was an orientation where we talked about actually how one can convey perspectives and tell their story through the lens of a camera. And so we practiced close-up shots and wide-angle shots. We also gave them some tips in terms of actually how to be able to use flash or think about backgrounds and what best to incorporate in their photos. We also talked about safety, because this was obviously a really important concern that we needed to take into account in terms of ensuring that the youth weren't going to put themselves in a precarious position just to be able to document something. And so we had the youth, we reviewed a safety protocol, and the youth actually had to sign a safety agreement to ensure that they were protecting themselves and not compromising their safety. And so across these sessions, the youth had to complete two photo voice assignments to answer the question of what influences me to make healthy and unhealthy food choices in my environment. In the past, with photo voice projects, what we often have is that I embed additional photo voice assignments. And as some of you may know, utilizing photo voice is that pretty much the data that you collect for the first assignment is not necessarily of the highest quality, and it provides also an opportunity for youth to really understand how to be able to best express themselves through photos. And so I usually incorporate a first photo voice assignment to just actually have them talk about what is health. And oftentimes we'll brainstorm about what components of health is most important to them, and they will do the first assignment around what they select as their topic. But because we had a very set time frame for our portion of the project, we had to really jump right in and focus on the questions that were of most interest and most relevant to the food justice program. So the photos that the youth took then were guided the interviews and the focus group discussions. So the interviews and discussions were audio taped, and they were transcribed verbatim. We had two investigators that reviewed each of the transcripts and used a combination of inductive and deductive processes to identify codes. And similar codes were then grouped into themes. So it was very much this iterative process. So here are some results. These are, I just want to mention that these are some preliminary results as we're kind of going through and we're digging deeper into the data. But we had a total of 16 participants, as I mentioned before, 9 females, 7 males, grades 6 to 8, and they were predominantly Hispanic. We worked with 2 main after-school sites of the Children's Aid Society in East Harlem and the South Bronx, and some of you may know that those are some of the communities that have the highest rates of childhood obesity and of poverty. And you can see the map on the left, which highlights the boroughs, the main boroughs. Staten Island actually isn't there, but there are 5 boroughs altogether in New York City, and the outline shapes are East Harlem and the South Bronx. And so there were 4 key themes that emerged from the data. Not surprisingly, that youth faced multiple barriers to a healthy food environment. Also, we found that at times, food and health-related knowledge were actually inconsistent at times and perhaps inaccurate. And another theme were that family members played a major role in personal food choices. And that's not too surprising of a result, but what we found with specifically unique to our perhaps unique to our participants, because we only had 16 participants, but that family played a larger role than peers. And then the fourth theme was that youth suggested ways to improve the current food environment at the community and the policy levels. So let me show you some results for each of these themes. So as I mentioned before, youth acknowledged that they faced multiple barriers to a healthy food environment, and more specifically, they expressed concerns around limited access to healthy foods and also easy accessibility to inexpensive, unhealthy foods. And some of those influences were driven by product placement, product packaging, and also advertisement. And one girl said, well, I was going to get a banana for breakfast, and I didn't have much money. I just bought a piece of candy because it was right next to the bananas. But the candy was $1, and the banana was 50 cents. If you go to a local store, everything is mixed together. A lot of children like candy, so obviously they're going to pick the candy. And so this highlights in terms of actually how the location of products can really drive selection. It may not necessarily be cost, because the candy was double the amount of a banana, but because of all the advertisements and the pretty packaging that this child led to, it resulted in this child selecting a candy where she originally wanted to go into the store to purchase a piece of fruit. So here's another quote from a different female participant, and she said that the pizza says 99 cents, and if you think that is really good, you'll keep buying it because it's $1. But it's really unhealthy, no matter how low the price, and it may make you want more. So this is acknowledging how there's easy accessibility to inexpensive food, and that a dollar slice of pizza leads to actually choosing perhaps unhealthier options. So in theme 2, as I mentioned, around food and health-related knowledge and attitudes, the majority of youth actually did express some good general understanding around nutrition concepts and health. However, there were some inconsistencies and some inaccuracies. So one child said, well, hot dogs are kind of healthy in one way because they don't have much sugar, and the biscuits, they're healthy because they have a lot of protein. And what was interesting, I was talking a little bit more about, I asked the child, well, you know, why is that? And it turns out that her family does have a history of type 2 diabetes, and so the focus around all that is about make sure that you are eliminating sugar. And so anything that doesn't have sugar actually can be healthy for you. So it was very interesting insight. So I wanted to highlight another theme around attitudes of food and how this was interesting. There were several youth that kept talking about the addictive nature of sugary foods. And one youth said, well, soda makes you feel like you're in heaven because of all the sugar. And then the taste, your body feels energetic and pumped up. And like I said, it was interesting that time and time again that youth were saying about this addictive nature, and I thought this child really kind of described it very well in terms of sensation. And other children said, well, I just can't stop. I keep wanting more. And we would go to interview the youth for this Food Wise Project. I was quite surprised at the number of Arizona iced tea cans that the youth are carrying around in during after school. It's just part of their day-to-day habits that they will go to the local bodega and grab Arizona iced tea because it's only 99 cents and then bring it to the after-school program and drink it while they're, you know, perhaps learning about food justice. So I will say that some of the food justice instructors did eliminate it and said they weren't allowed to bring it in, but others that you saw that they were bringing in, but there were many other youth within the sites that you just saw walking around with Arizona iced teas, and I had asked some of them, well, how many of those do you actually consume in a given day? And some was, you know, 2 to 3 cans every day, and it's just standard. They'll go in the morning, get it from the convenience store before they go to school, and after school, they'll go to the bodega again and buy at least another one, if not two. So it highlights in terms of, obviously, how prevalent this behavior is. So with theme three, I mentioned that family members do play a major role in personal food choices. Several youth acknowledge both positive and negative influences in terms of how family members may influence their own food choices. So this one highlights a positive one. Girl said, well, my grandfather was the one that changed me to drink water because he said that Pepsi could cause cancer. I don't want to have cancer because I'm living such a beautiful life, so I changed. So highlighting in terms of actually the generational relationships and how that really could play a role in terms of influencing positive behavior. On the flip side, though, that this quote highlights actually how a grandmother influences actually negative behaviors. So this child said, well, in my grandmother's house, she only has Pepsi and faucet water, and I really don't like faucet water. So I would have to fill a thermos of Poland Spring water because she has no water at home and only has Pepsi and juice. So highlighting in terms of actually how the home food environment can provide limitations in terms of promoting positive food behaviors. So moving on to theme four in terms of the solutions to the current food environment, and many of the youth did express changes that actually could be made at the community and policy levels and suggested ways to make an impact either within their community, perhaps actually building a community food garden, or to reach out to companies or policymakers to express their concerns. And in fact, one child said, well, I'd write a letter. I can write a letter to say to food companies and say, can you decrease the sugar content in some of your food products? And another child said, well, maybe I can start putting up posters around the community or in the school, or I can go into the office and ask them, may I use a loudspeaker and influence people to eating healthy and having fun sometimes with junk food, but not all the time. So highlighting in terms of perhaps that he could, you know, put together a campaign, a marketing campaign around healthy eating, or actually within his school environment to be able to make announcements around positive eating and utilizing moderation. And being able to enjoy food in all varieties, but in moderation. So on another note, though, that in relation to theme four, while the youth did acknowledge that the community food environment certainly could be improved upon, but some also mentioned that regardless of the food environment, what one consumes is ultimately a personal choice. So one child said, well, it is on you personally because nobody is going to stop you from eating what you want. It is you. So I just wanted to highlight, I mentioned this at the beginning, that this was in combination with a 24-week food justice program with the Children's Aid Society, and we had a youth food justice celebration at the end of the project where we also incorporate a photo voice exhibit to increase community awareness of the youth concerns. And so we invited community leaders, other youth organizations. There are about 150 people who attended this celebration, and it was a really incredible opportunity for the youth to showcase their work. So in conclusion, photo voice can be an effective tool to be able to engage youth in recognizing barriers and facilitators in their food environment. And by drawing attention to these barriers and also to create awareness around the issues and concerns, that this could lead to facilitating ideas for promoting positive change in food environments where the youth live. And because as we all know, that we really want to focus, Photo Voice is ultimately meant to lead to these transformative actions, to be able to advocate and to promote policy change. And so that's really obviously where we want to think about how we can move and shift this project into harnessing the full potential of the work. So on that note, I just want to acknowledge the collaboration with Children's Aid Society, and specifically their East Harlem and South Bronx sites, and of course the youth participants, and the funding sources based at Hunter College. Thank you.
Thank you for that wonderful talk. And I think the photos become great tools for dissemination, and allows you to kind of create, tell your story and tell the story of your participants in a way that is very impactful. So let me open it up to questions. We have some time, and I'm happy to have folks address any of our four wonderful speakers. In the second row. So there's no statistical analysis and a qualitative approach, so it would be a thematic analysis. Yeah. In vivo is right, but that's not statistical, but it's a great idea, too.